somebody on the phone lines here on line one who is one of the original dignitaries of the FDH Lounge.
Nathan Noy.
Don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. I'm rocking my pants, putting suckers in beer, making the tears rain down like a monsoon. Listen to the bass go boom, explosion.
Nate, how you doing, buddy? I know you're as charged up for this as we are.
Absolutely. I'm wondering if they'll be playing that in Marshall's locker room tomorrow night. Probably not.
I don't think it's gonna do them any good. Let's bring in, as I say, additionally here, good friend of ours, the scout Ken Becks, firstdownscouting.com, a charter member, a member in great standing of the 21st Century Media Alliance, along with FDH and STN. Scout, how you doing, pal? Great to have you on tonight.
Hey, what's going on, Vic? You know, anytime it's time to talk some football, the scout's there for you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We're going to have fun tonight. And again, as I said previously, I regret that family illness is keeping away John Binet of the Mile High Report here tonight, but it's great to have you two guys with us here. Jason Jones in another 5 to 10 minutes coming on. And I want to tell you, I've been pointing to this for a long time. I decided to do September 1st as a night just for football, and it's justifiable on the subject matter alone. But I want to say what really, really, really got me hyped. We did this for the 100th episode. We were looking for a standout cornerstone feature for the 100th one back April 28th. We couldn't get you on, Scout, because you had professional commitments that night. John Binet was on with us instead. He's out tonight. You're in. But it's going to be great nonetheless. It just went so well with that night. It's just it's not just talking football. It's talking football with this panel, and knowing that we have a panel to do this that is better than anybody else anywhere could assemble. That's what excites me. That's what's gotten me fired up here for tonight. So let's get to it. Let's talk some general theory here at the outset. I was figuring we'd kind of talk some general theory, X's and O's. That's a lot of what we did back on the 100th episode. We didn't get much specifically into NFL and NCAA, but we'll get a chance to do that later on. Like to start with this one here, the 3-4 and a 4-3, something we talked about on the 100th episode. You've got a situation where, and I'll start with you on this one, Scout, and get your thoughts. It's very, very interesting to me that Notre Dame now is running the 3-4. We talked about that back in April, why nobody in college was. Now they are. It's almost kind of a mirror image right now. Charlie Weiss used to flash the Super Bowl rings in the faces of recruits and say, hey, come play my pro-style offense. I'll get you ready for the pros. Now, Brian Kelly can do this with guys that are cut out to play in the 3-4. Hey, come to Notre Dame. We will be a unique proving ground for you for the 3-4 offense. Many pro teams are running this. Hardly any college programs are. We are unique in our ability to groom you for the pro game. So as you look at this, Ken, what are some of the ramifications? How far-reaching is this going to be that Brian Kelly went and hired himself a 3-4 guy to run his defense for him, both in terms of how they're going to line up on Saturdays and getting guys ready to play on Sundays?
Well, quite honestly, I think it was a stroke of genius, meaning there are really not too many 3-4 defenses in the college ranks, like you were saying, Rick, and he's pretty much going to have his pick of the litter. Talking about those tweener-type athletes and the guys already at that type of size to come right in and fit right into the program. Also, you know, when you're looking transitioning to the NFL level, now you don't have to, try to project guys when they're already there. And one thing the NFL doesn't like to do is try to project. They try to go with the sure thing. So that he's going to go to this 3-4 right now when a lot of teams are at the college level, you know, aren't doing that, he can definitely pitch the NFL draft side of it. And another thing is, I'm sure you guys know it, it's harder to get the big guys on the D-line. I mean, there's so many guys, only a finite number of guys coming out of the high school ranks that have the size, speed, dimensions that you're looking for that can plug right in and take care of business. So just by sheer numbers, it's easier and quicker to get four guys at the linebacker spot than it would be at the D-line spot. So I think it was one thing he had to do, and it's just smart long-term.
Yeah, damn skippy, and it's hard to get the guys that are the big space-eater hogs that you need in there on that defensive line that can occupy the offensive line and let the linebackers fly around and make the plays. We were talking about this in April, Nate, when you were part of the group, and when we were looking at it then, it was a matter of projectability. And you were, I remember you making the point and saying you're going to have to get bright kids anyways, and that's what the college guys are looking for. They're looking for bright kids with adaptability. But, again, like the scout was saying just a second ago, this seems like a game changer because it's one thing you're going to target bright kids, projectability on what they can do. Now there's one program churning out kids where you don't have to project what they can do in the 3-4. You just pop the film on your screen and you'll watch it.
Oh, I absolutely agree, Rick. And, I mean, the other thing that you just kind of touched on there, you know, even though Notre Dame's had multiple down seasons, they still have the significant advantage of having their own television contract. You know, when you go recruit a kid for Notre Dame, you say, look, we're going to be on national TV every game. You know, this isn't, you know, even if you're playing for one of these Big Ten teams, there'll be two or three games where nobody watches it, probably unless you're local. But everybody in the country will watch all of your football games. And you're right. I mean, you know, it's so easy now for the scouts, you know, flip it on. There it is. You get to see these guys play 10, 11, 12, 13 times in the season. And it is a great selling point for Kelly. You know, we'll see how it works. I think a lot of what type of defense you run depends on the matchups you face. And so, you know, they're going to play more teams that feature the pass versus the run. You know, those are the kind of factors. And, you know, even if that's his base defense, they might switch to the, you know, go back and forth depending on the situation as well as, you know, again, the matchup. So,
Well, another good thing about running that 3-4, too, I guess, you know, you guys got to think about, too, and I'm sure you'll agree, is you're getting more skilled athletes out there. So it's giving you a lot more versatility both, you know, against the run and the pass because it's putting a lot of pressure on that offensive line as far as who to block, where to block, do we double team, I mean, are we doing a, you know, counter? It's just so many different things other than just the athleticness of the players that you're going against. It's just where are they coming from? I mean, you can put guys in a two-point stance, three-point, four-point, and it just starts a lot of confusion if you look at the Steelers, you know, looking at the NFL level. And even the Ravens, you can bring that type of mentality to the college level and be one of the first teams to do it. I'll tell you what, that's going to be a big advantage.
Do you think that will force Notre Dame's opponents into more two tight end sets and that type of offense, knowing that they're going to match up against a defense that's going to bring it like that?
You know, that's a good way to counter that. I was thinking about that myself, Nate, and I think that's a good way to counter it, especially a team like, you know, like Alabama with the two running backs, you know, and the two tight ends. And just go right at them defense. The best way to beat the athletes is just go straight right at them.
I got to say, and this has been a really good taste of things right off the bat here. I'd like to take this moment, as self-serving as it is, to compare and contrast to a terrestrial radio station that we have in town here, where one of the hosts last year, if you can believe this, during the season, was bemoaning the fact that there was not much of a pass rush from the defensive ends in the Browns, yes, 3-4 defense. No names, please. Rizzo. I'd like to just compare and contrast this level of discourse from why aren't the defensive ends in a 3-4 rushing the passer better. Just awesome. Great start here, fellas. I got the next one here. I want to set this up. I'll start with you again, Ken, because this is from something where you and I have discussed this in the past, and I referred back to the e-book previously at the beginning of the year here when you and Jason were doing the chat that I moderated. We were talking about quarterbacks in the league here. It was very interesting. You and I kind of came at this, I will say, from a little bit kind of different perspectives here. I'm looking at it, admittedly, maybe on the surface, I guess, I don't know, but I'm looking at it like there's a lot of young QBs coming into the league who really kind of seem promising, you know, from the Ryans and the Flaccos potentially to the Sanchezes, on and on. I think Stafford in Detroit is going to have a bright future eventually. None of these guys are quite at the Peyton Manning level yet, but it wouldn't shock me if, you know, at least two or three of them got up near there in the time to come. It's very interesting. You kind of took the other aspect of it here, Ken. You were looking at it like, well, you still got a lot of the best athletes that are getting put at positions other than quarterback. You've got, you know, the Calvin Johnsons of the world. I think you cited him as an example. He's playing wide receiver, so you don't have the best athletes on the field doing that. So just like to kind of take a look at this here. Basically, we'll start with you, Scout. Take a minute, talk about your position, and then I'll kind of get Nate's thoughts on this.
Yeah, you know, I think it all starts in the high school level. And if you look back at the high school level, normally, you know, even a pickup game, you're looking at the best athlete, you throw him behind center and make him do, you know, let him do what he wants. let his creativity take over, you know, and so on and so forth. Now, as you go up the different levels, let's go, you know, junior high might be the same. Pee-wee, you know, junior high might be the same way. Even with high school, depending on the level of high school that you're playing with, you still usually have your best athletes, you know, getting the touches in their hands. And once they hit the college level, I tend to see your better athletes tend to get to be moved to different positions. And a lot of times I'll hear, well, you know, we got a good quarterback here now, and we like to get our best players on the field. And I have no problem with that. But projecting long term, because like I brought up, Kelvin Johnson, Brandon Marshall, those guys coming out of high school were high school quarterbacks. Now, you know, for me to say I know for a doubt they'd be franchise-type guys if had they went to college and went and did what they did, I can't really say that. But what I can say, once you have playmakers at that size, with ideal size, running a 4-3-4-4, the ability to scramble, the ability to improvise, the ability to, scramble and elude defenders, to keeping pass plays alive, I think, you know, those type of players would be much more heralded, much more important to the team than put at a wide receiver position or another position where they don't get quite as many touches and quite honestly aren't going to be as helpful to the team.
Okay. Well, let's look at it here. Let's get your opinion on this, Nate. I'm saying kind of a quasi-golden age of the QBs coming up. The scout seems to be saying it's still not all that it can be. Where do you come down on this?
Yeah, I agree, Rick. I mean, I think you got to look at, you know, the number of jobs available, and, you know, you've got, who knows, thousands of high schools. You have thousands of kids that get to be quarterback in high school. You've got 120 division football, bowl division schools in college football. You know, then you've got some pretty good IAA schools. You know, Delaware's producing quarterbacks, other the double that the AA schools do. But, you know, you've got 120 of those jobs. There's only 32 jobs in the NFL, and it's not like there's turnover every year either. I mean, you've got Tom Brady, Peyton Manning. Those guys are going to be around four or five more years. So, you know, every year there's, what, three to four opening jobs in the NFL for a quarterback. You've got 120 kids that were just the starting quarterback at their college. So three or four of those guys have the potential to become a starting quarterback in the NFL probably. I mean, you know, if you've got that type of talent and you want to play pro football, then a lot of times I think you have to switch out of the position to do that. And, you know, I mean, if you're the best thing in the world, and the other thing is, you know, think about the college level. Think about the guys that have won the Heisman and how nothing in the pros. Can't even make a pro team. You know, Troy Smith.
Now, what I will say about that, Nate, I don't mean to interrupt. A lot of those guys are stat guys, but not really projected towards the NFL. You know what I'm saying? Like the BYU guys, the system quarterback guys, like the Texas Tech guys. Examples of guys I'm talking about coming out now that are going to redefine how the NFL is played are, you know, Gerard Johnson, Texas A&M, about 6'6", 230, 240. Ryan Mallett, 6'6", 240, coming out of, you know, Arkansas. Cameron Newton, you know, the one-time backup at Florida. Now at Auburn, same thing, 6'6", 230, 240. And these guys aren't just, you know, big guys. They can move, make things happen. And I'm going to tell you, unless teams are starting to look prior at Ohio State right here in the area, unless you're going to start to gravitate to those kind of athletes, I think you're going to be behind the table. And just like over at Notre Dame, how they're going to the 3-4, you got to be ahead instead of following when it comes to out-of-the-box type thinking.
Now, let me ask you this. I don't want to go on a tangent, Rick, but it just popped in my mind.
Okay.
A question needs to be asked.
Let's go with it.
You know, especially with Ingram and Little Gimpy, Pryor right now the second favorite in Vegas to be the Heisman winner, you know, and it's hard to repeat. So I think he's got a great chance to win the Heisman. Say he does win the Heisman, what do you think of him as an NFL prospect? Do you think he has a chance to be a quarterback, or do you think he needs to switch positions to really have a legitimate shot to play on Sundays?
I'm sorry, who did you say this was?
Pryor.
For Terrell Pryor.
Oh, wow. I got mixed opinions because I'm going to tell you, I really don't think there's another position other than quarterback that he can play, because the thing is, projecting that he's just not going to be able to play a defensive guy. I mean, he just doesn't have the physical toughness. I feel like once you're on the one side of the it's easy to go from defense to offense than the other way around, you know, because you're just not used to those hits. And then you're making that move at the NFL level. So I'm just definitely taking defense out of it. On the offensive side of it, the only thing I can project him at is quarterback, because he's definitely not going to be the type you're going to put weight on and try and throw him at the tight end spot. I think he definitely lacks the quick twitch. He might run a 4-3, but he just doesn't have the quick twitch to elude, you know, players at the next level, you know, at the wide receiver spot. Now, he can go deep, but you still got to have some kind of versatility at the NFL level. So the only thing I can project him at is at quarterback. And, if, you know, honestly, I would be projecting him in the mid-second to third round because his lack of consistency. And I just don't see the overall quarterback skill in the pocket. You know, I just can't see him bringing somebody back to Ohio State in the fourth quarter being 14 points down and everything being on him and him bringing the offense back.
Now, Scout, let me ask you about that. I want to draw you out and use that as a little bit of a devil's advocate here for what you're talking about with putting the great athletes a quarterback, because I think we can agree. I mean, he might be lacking the quick twitch and a handful of other things, but he is a dynamic physical specimen. I think we can agree on this. I wonder to what extent coaches are shying away, because at the end of the day, that arm is I don't know if it's necessarily the most important thing. If you're a complete immobile slug, it doesn't get you anywhere. But you have to have the delivery system to be able to get at the guys. You know, touch on the deep passes would be nice, but you've got to be able to hit guys intermediate, underneath, whatever. The problem with Pryor, and I've seen it from watching games where I've been in person. I saw it at a Rose Bowl party last year. The guy that I was watching it with, we looked at each other and shook our heads at the same time. I think it was on the one interception he threw. He has such a great arm. He's so dynamic. He does like the elbow cock throw.
Right.
I mean, he can throw it like 40 yards on an elbow cock. He falls in love with his physical gifts. Isn't he the kind of guy that makes coaches look at like a Calvin Johnson or something and say, you know what, better safe than sorry. I'm going to put the great athlete. Yeah, he won't have the ball in his hands as much, but at least, you know, maybe he won't fall too much in love with his physical gifts and make bad throws.
Now, you know who he reminds me of coming out of the 2006 draft? I remember they had Liner, who's just about ready to get cut or traded. Of course, Vince Young. And if you remember right, I wasn't high on either one of those guys.
Right.
And the third guy was Cutler. Now, I was higher on Cutler, and to this point, I'd have to say I'm not going to call him a bust. At least he's had the higher ceiling between the three. And I'm kind of putting Pryor in that same situation, because the one thing I've noticed with the quarterback position, if you cannot process quick enough, the Charlie Fry factor, you know, see guy open, how long does it take you to process to get it to the guy?
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? If you have to think to throw it to him, and your timing's not there, like Pryor, along with the funny throwing motion. I'm going to tell you, over the years, you know, I've been doing this for 20, 30 years with the evaluations. And if you're a duck now, you're going to stay a duck later normally, you know, 90-something percent of the time. So though you might get, you know, enthralled about his athletic ability, and I know how I brung that up in the past, you know, about the athletic quarterback and so on and so forth. But in this situation, I just don't think it's either one or two things. The Ohio State coaching staff hasn't worked with him, or he just doesn't have the throwing motion, and it doesn't have anything to do with so much IQ as far as, you know, if you're in a college setting, but football IQ processing. And I just don't think he has it. When it, like I said, see open guy, get it there right now. And I just don't – if you see your top guys, Drew Brees is perfect for this.
Right.
You know, his timing, once he sees it, it's gone. He doesn't think to throw it, it just goes. And I don't see that from him, and that scares the heck out of me.
Do you think it's important that, you know, in the college career, maybe you face three or four games where you have guys, the quickness of defensive backs in the NFL, because, you know, there's just not as many of them. Is that the big thing, that the reaction time for the DBs in the NFL is just, you've never faced it before until you get there, and that's when you get exposed?
You know, I really don't think that's it, Nate. I think, really, when it comes to the quarterback position, I think you're either born with that IQ, you know, to process, or you're not. And, you know, another guy, there's so many down the road, like a Jeff George, you know, had the rocket arm. I know you remember him, Rick.
Yeah.
But he just, if you really watched him, he never seemed comfortable in the. He just didn't process. He didn't look fluid. He didn't look comfortable. It looked like he was thinking and working because he didn't have the IQ. And that's why I say the Charlie Fry, because a lot of us, you know, Cleveland Browns fans, I know you have to remember that. You know, Charlie being in the pocket, you know, the feet start, you know, getting funny. You know, he started seeing the defenders probably from left to right. And I'm going to tell you, the process, you know, the throwing process and IQ just goes out the box. And then that's why you have a lot of the interceptions. And DeLome is another one. You know, I know he's brown and everything, but it's the same thing I see again, you know. And the IQ process to get that ball there just isn't there.
Before we
I've
got
to ask you this real quick.
Yeah.
Jamarcus Russell, what was your take on him before he was drafted and then what happened to him?
Total bust. I don't know if Rick remembers that, but total. I wouldn't even took him in the first round.
Oh, yeah. But here's what
total bust. When you come to your pro day, okay, I don't care if he was the hottest thing since butter with potatoes. If you come to your pro day and you're 20, 30 pounds overweight, if I'm in the top five, you're eliminated. Because at 22 or 21, if you're not at a good, you know, status with your weight then, what are you going to be, you know, 3 to 4 years down the line after you got that paycheck? I mean, you have to start. The process of evaluating these guys aren't just on the field, you know, their character. And after you evaluate guys for so long, I can tell you after two games, if that guy pretty much, without talking to him in person, if he's got character. There's certain things how a player walks, how he acts after, you know, how does he go back to the huddle? And, you know, how does he do after adversity? Does he put his head down? For quarterbacks, I mean, do they take charge in the huddle? You know, I mean, there's a lot of things that you look for, not just athletically, but certain things that I call ballers. You know, certain real true ballers do certain things. And that goes across the line with no matter what position.
Guys who can go snap the whistle, as you like to say, Scout. Before we move on to the next thing I was going to ask you, let me follow up there. You were telling me off air, it's funny, we were talking about Terrell Pryor a second ago. You may not be as impressed with him, but there is another Ohio State quarterback of relatively recent vintage that you are impressed with that you see as being undervalued.
Oh, no question about it. Troy Smith. Now, before I get into talking about Troy Smith, I know, you know, in the past, Rick, you know, I'll come up with guys that Matt Moore, for instance, last year. I was bringing him up. I think I brought him up to you last couple years, a guy at UCLA undrafted. And I remember him sitting behind DeLome, and I remember him at UCLA. Coming out of UCLA, he was kind of thin. You know, he needed to, you know, fill out his body, but he had the touch. He had the process I'm talking about. Do I think he's a franchise guy? No. No question about it. But he's a guy that, you know, can do until you get that franchise guy. He's a guy that can take you to the playoffs, you know, and who knows what's going to happen from there. But, yeah, getting back to what you were saying, okay, I got so much processing. What's going on, Rick? What was the question? you know how the scout gets.
No problem. I know you got a lot going on there. Basically, Troy Smith. Talk about why you like him.
Yeah. I'm really glowing about him. And he's another one. There's like a handful of guys right now. Whitehurst was one of them I talked to.
Yeah.
You know, and I told you about him before Seattle grabbed him away from the Chargers. And he's got all the things I'm talking about along with the size. Now, Troy Smith might not have what you call ideal size, but like I told you in the past, Rick, you know, true ballers come in all different shapes and sizes.
Right.
You know, look at a Steve Smith. You know, he doesn't have the ideal size, but I don't know too many people that wouldn't take him as your first or second receiver. You know what I mean? Now, and getting back to Troy Smith, he has all the things I'm looking for. Troy Smith, despite what most people say, is a pocket passer.
Right.
He looks to throw first. He's got good foot. He reminds me of Drew Brees in a lot of ways because he's got good active feet, constantly moving, which is always a good thing. If you look at Peyton Manning, a lot of the good guys, their feet are constantly moving, you know, in small little increments. And he's always looking downfield. When the play breaks down, the first thing you notice with Troy, he doesn't look to run downfield. He looks to extend plays. When he throws the ball normally is crisp. He gets it, you know, gets his feet up under him, gets his hips up under him, gets a nice torque and throws it. He has the ability, you know, to throw on the move, in the pocket, durability, can take the hits. And I'm going to tell you, if anybody ever takes the chance of bringing this guy in, And even as your number two, because as you know, most times number twos are going to get their shot one way or the other. He's really going to surprise some people.
Okay. Very interesting.
Rick, if I can interject a quick question. I really want to know what the scout thinks about Jake Locker, since you know most people are projecting him potentially to be the first pick in the draft next year.
Yeah, what do you think?
He hasn't had a lot of winning success at Washington, but what's your take on his ability?
You know, he scares me a little bit because, he kind of fits the prior mold, not the same kind of dimensions or anything like that. But I look at he's definitely a football player. He scares me as a quarterback because, once again, I don't like his delivery. I do have to do some more homework on him, but just off the top of my head, I don't see the natural IQ process or the progressions that I'm looking for. But, you know, with them quarterbacks, a lot of times, you know, people overlook things like a Jamarcus Russell because he could throw it out of the stadium. Well, we'll overlook that, you know, he might not have a high percentage throwing, or we'll overlook this, that, and the other. I'm going to tell you, you really got to watch that. Right now, I'm looking at him. I know he's not going to drop that low, but I'm looking at him as a guy you pick in 15th overall or down, because he's not going to come right in and you know, change your team right off the bat. So is he going to go 15th overall? No.
Okay.
No, he won't do that. But, you know, I'm not high on him right now, you know, as far as the number one pick.
Interesting. You got a strong track record of being right on this. Scout, I know you got a book in a little bit here, at least for now. I do want to ask you this, if I can, before we get to that. I know you worked with USA Football last year back when the World Championships were in Canton. So I'll start with you on this. Question as to the talent pool here, the expanding talent pool. Where do you think some of the next great frontiers are going to come from? Internationally, are we anywhere close to that? Smaller colleges due to YouTube and other advancements in film sharing. You look at Ryan Clady having come out of Boise State. I saw that as kind of a milestone right there. It's not just a running back or a cornerback that slipped through the tackles, but a franchise left tackle. That kind of shows you this environment where guys are coming from unlikely places. So start with you, Scott. Where do you think some of the areas are, at least in the next couple of years, where we're going to get some of these unlikely guys emerging from?
Now, are you talking about from different countries, or are you talking about different colleges, off-the-mark colleges?
I tell you what, a little bit of both, actually. I mean, do you think any of these countries are going to rival even the smaller colleges anytime soon for being talent pools? Or how are you kind of seeing this break down? You know, we know about the football factories churning out guys.
Right.
That'll be a constant for the next 100 years like it was the last 100 years. But in terms of smaller schools, internationally, whatever, how do you think the talent pool is going to continue to emerge in some of the ways that may seem a little more unlikely to people?
Well, looking at the when I was over at the, like you were saying, with the USA team, we were definitely dominant over that way. I really didn't see any other teams that were close to us athletically. And you have to remember, that wasn't really, I wouldn't say our top guys.
Okay.
That was more like 3 to 4 star guys.
Uh-huh.
You know, just a few sprinkled 4 star guys. So if we would have, you know, had our 5 star type guys, that, you know, it would have been, you know, totally one-sided. But, you know, Canada had a few guys here and there that, you know, could match up size-wise and somewhat quickness. But to be honest with you, most other countries, just they're either lacking in size or quickness. They just, you know, tend not to have the combination that you're looking for at the D1 top-level colleges. Now, you know, maybe, you know, the lower-level colleges in D1, you know, maybe your Arkansas State or, you know, somebody like that, maybe some of these guys can compete. But when you start talking Big Ten, SEC, you know, top level of Division One, no, they're quite a ways off. But
okay.
As far as the NFL draft goes, as far as, you know, getting their talent pool, you know, I'll tell you, Rick, I don't really think as many people understand. I'll say as far as fifth round and undrafted guys, there are a ton of guys on NFL rosters right now. And I really do believe that the way the scouting process is done is really going to have to be changed up, because there just isn't enough time, I don't think, given to the lower level Division I teams and God forbid, the Division II and III, which, you know, most people don't have time for. But like Marshall. I know Marshall's, I believe, playing Ohio State, and there's a couple of guys that I love off that team, and you'll see those. Like, I think they're playing tomorrow, aren't they?
Yeah, tomorrow night.
Yeah. And they got a couple of wide receivers over there, and I believe they're sophomores this upcoming year, Aaron Dobson and Tavius Wilson. And these kind of guys can play for, you know, the Boise's, Ohio States, but they just happen to go to Marshall for whatever reason. These guys are all across the country. Like, you brought up Taylor from last year. Remember, from Ohio University, we were talking about him off the phone, Rick. Now, he could have easily started for Ohio State. You know, this is a 4-3 guy. Had good patterns. Got drafted by, I believe, the Patriots, what, in the 5th, 6th, 7th round?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And Edelman. I know you remember him. I brought him up.
Yep.
He was a sensation last year, and that was a guy I was, remember, raving about him coming out of Kent State. He was a quarterback, and like I said, he'd be a great converted guy, receiver, punt returner, kick returner type dude, you know. And that's exactly what New England did, and you see the success he had. So not only do you have to have, you know, the insight to know where to go to find these guys, you got to have the insight and out-the-box thinking to be able to change these guys, you know, transitioning from a linebacker to fullback, a fullback to linebacker. Running back might have to go to cornerback, so on and so forth. You just want to get your best athletes with instincts for the football game on the field, and that's the best way to do it. And I am starting to see the NFL doing things such as that.
Interesting, interesting. But before I get Nate's take on this, are we at the point here, Scott, where you got to check out for a little bit, or how's your schedule looking?
I'll tell you what, you get ready to go to break?
Well, I'll tell you what.
I can do a couple of more minutes with you.
Oh, yeah.
I got one more guy I want to know about, Rick.
I'll tell you what, Scout. Let's hear Nate's response to what you just said, and then if you got any thoughts on that, go ahead, and we'll go to break after that. So, Nate, you just heard the Scout breaking it down. What's your take on this, the future of the talent pool, aside from the obvious places?
Yeah, I agree with what the Scout said. I don't think internationally, I mean, you just don't, it's not like basketball, you know, where it's so easy just to grab a hoop and you grab a ball and start shooting at a hoop, and with these, you know, they just don't play our level of football anywhere. We don't have peewee football in Europe, you know, they don't have the college level in Europe. So if you're not getting that type of experience, and how are you going to create that type of talent? And the best athletes don't want to play football. They want to play football or basketball, you know. They're not going to play NFL football, American football. It ain't going to happen. The guy I really want to know about, too, I know we're a little off topic, but John Clay, Offensive Player of the Year in the Big Ten, has a chance to rival Pryor this year for that. What are his prospects for the NFL?
Yeah, what do you think, Scout?
You know, I'm glad you brought him up because he's a guy, I tell you what, I already project him. He probably won't go there. I'm talking now, when I do projections, and Rick, you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about value.
Yep.
And the way I project my value is, you know, okay, what do I think his highest ceiling is as a player? If he was, you know, put in an ideal situation, and even if he wasn't. Okay, now, when I say a premier player, they can play in any kind of position. And it doesn't, if you put a Marshall Faulk in any kind of offense, he's going to excel no matter what. You know, so he's a five-star guy, a franchise running back, no doubt about it. John Elway. You know, those kind of guys come far, few in between, and that's why they're top five picks. You know, when you start talking about somebody like John Clay, to be honest with you, I think his best long-term position, now, you know, a lot of this has to do with what team he goes to. Now, a guy is going to be about 6'1", 248. I do like he does have good vision, okay, but I tell you what, he'd have to get into a situation somewhat like the Browns, like we were talking off the phone too, Rick, where you might can play, you know, swap back and forth, fullback, running back. Because I don't think John Clay, you know, possesses the overall skills to be a 20-plus guy and effectively play, like, let's say, a Ravens team and be able to push the corners, you see?
Uh-huh.
If you can't push the corners consistently against the defense, your value is going to go down. Now, the one thing I like that from transition from college to the pro level that you have to have as a running back, and Rick, you know this is my pet peeve, you got to be able to run between the tackles.
Yep.
If you can't do that for me at the college level, I really don't have much use for you as a full-time running back. So, for instance, was it Jaquez? What's the guy over at Oregon State.
Oh.
The little running back, Jaquez Rogers.
Yeah, Rogers.
Now, I like him. You know, and what I call him, he's a touches guy. You know, get him in space. You know, get him 15 to 20 touches in a game because he's an impact type of guy. is he going to be an every down running back in the NFL? No, not in my opinion. But is he worthy to get 15, 20 touches in a game? No question about it. Through special teams, backfield, slot, whatever you got to do. Almost like a McCluster that came out of Mississippi is at Kansas City right now. John Clay, getting back to him, he definitely has to go to the ideal situation if he's going to be a 20-plus carry guy. You know, let's say Pittsburgh, like back in the day. The Browns, how they're trying to do Peyton Hillis right now. Other than that kind of offense, I think, you know, he's going to be a situational type guy, like a Duckett that used to, you know, come out of Michigan State. Or he'd be an awesome fullback. An awesome fullback. Now, I know a lot of people don't want to hear that, and I know there might not be a lot of value for that type of fullback, but I'll tell you what, if you can get a guy at fullback, and if he could, you know, utilize his blocking skills properly, I'll tell you what, there's a lot of yards to be gained in that, if that hole is open right there at that line. And he's got enough burst and enough straight line speed that he could be a weapon at that fullback spot if, you know, his blocking skills were good.
Yeah, and that's what you got to look for is that kind of versatility and the ability to, you know, throw the blocks as well as be able to, you know, tote the rock there, keep the confidence of the coaching staff all the way around. Jerome Harrison didn't have the confidence of the Browns coaching staff much of last year because of his perceived inability to pick up blitzes. I'll tell you what, we're going to go to the top of the hour break. Scott,
Rick, I'll tell you what, let me throw this out to you and Nate before I get out of here. I'll come back on. I got to take off and get right back.
Okay.
But now here's one of my quick out-of-the-box thinking. Now, if you remember, I told you Reggie Bush wasn't going to be an every-down running back.
Yep.
A bust as a running back, and everybody thought I was crazy there. His ideal position, now think about this, is at the slot spot.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's
you're right.
Nobody, there's no linebacker that's going to deal with him. There's no corner that can deal with him. The safety can't deal with him. If somebody moved him there, you'd have a Pro Bowler for 3, 4, 5, 6 years.
I think you're right about
easily,
that.
Easily.
That would be a matchup nightmare. You've given us something to chew on. Again, I know, Scout, you got to check out right now. We'll look forward to hearing from you again here tonight when you're able to. And I know that your boy Jason Jones, our senior editor, he was delayed a little bit, but he's going to be on with us here in this hour. He should be on when you come back, and we'll have fun. I know it's been fun for you two guys mixing it up. You've never been on together before, but as
right.
I said before, I knew you would do great together. Nice job, fellas.
Yeah. Thanks.
Well, I love it.
A couple more questions. I've got to ask the scout when he comes back, so please come back.
No doubt. Hey, do more than that. Hey, do more than that. Get some more than that, Nate. Come on now. I want a challenge here. Come on.
I got a couple that have to be asked. So.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And I see line 4 getting lit up. That must be Jason now. All right.